Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
September 19th, 2006, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, Inside Pro Tips. Well, welcome back to another show. I've got some good stuff for you today, as I hope you feel I always do. We're going to talk about some of the things that I've learned lately from conversations with fellow photographers. There's a lot going on right now. We got back from the Iceland trip. I'm working on a lot of projects down in San Francisco, and I've had a lot of time to hang out with photographers and just talk shop. And as I've been talking shop with these folks, they've told me some great stuff that I didn't know or never dawned on me. And I thought, wow, you know, I think I'm going to make a short list of some of my favorite discoveries from these conversations and share them with you, because I think that almost everything that I'm going to talk about today will help you as you work on your photography. I'm going to jump right in, and then we'll get to some of the virtual camera club business a little bit later in the show, but I want to get right to the tips right now. This first tip is from a photographer I was just chatting with the other day, Maggie Hallahan. And as you may recall, I interviewed her a few shows back when we were talking about setting up the model shoot that we did in Iceland. Anyway, Maggie and I were working on some other stuff, and we were just kind of talking about things. And she told me about the story actually from Iceland about memory cards that she had lost. Now, this is something that would just make any of us just go crazy. What happened was, it was the last day of the shoot, and she had a rental car, and she was bopping around, and she was like shooting a lot of stuff. She had a lot of stuff lined up for that last day to get it in under the wire so that she could have it and have everything that she needed before she left for home. So she had, about 8 gigs of memory cards that she was working with. She was just shooting away. What happened was, because she ran out of time near the end of the day, had to get the car back, and then had to get to the airport in order to catch her flight home. Otherwise, you know, basically she would be stranded with no place to stay, which is not something you really want somewhere like Iceland. So she was in this kind of rush, and she had been leaving her memory cards there kind of on the car console as she was working. So she'd shoot, and then she'd change cards, and she'd put the one card down on the console of the car and put in a new one in, and then dash back out and do some more shooting. And she was working like this for hours and hours, and had really amassed quite a few shots, and a lot of them were shots that she really liked. They were shots that she had been waiting to capture all week, and they finally came together on that last day. Well, what happens was, she turned in the car, she did get to the airport, she gets on the plane, you know, kind of does a big sigh of relief, and she's sitting there in her seat on the plane and says, well, I have a little time now because I got a fairly long flight back. I'm going to review some of the stuff that I shot today because I'm really excited about it, and I didn't really have a chance to look at it while I was on the go. She starts digging through her bag, and those memory cards are nowhere to be found. She can't find them anywhere. Now, you can imagine how this would feel. First of all, the actual cards themselves, you know, 8 gigs of flash memory, compact flash memory, that's not exactly cheap. So there's like a dollar investment there. But then on top of that, all of those wonderful shots that she had been building up to all week were on those cards, and she didn't have them with her. That she hadn't had a chance to upload them to her computer. They weren't backed up. They were sitting in the console of the rental car she had turned back in. Talk about a feeling in the pit of your stomach. Oh my gosh. So she gets home, and the first thing that she does is she calls the rental car agency to see if anyone had found the memory cards and turned them back in. And they hadn't. And in fact, they went out to look in the car themselves to see if they could find them. And the car had already been rented. They didn't actually go out to look. They checked their records. And the car had already been rented. So the car came in. They cleaned it up. Out it went. No one turned in the memory cards. So at this point, Maggie's thinking, oh my gosh, these things are gone. Not only am I going to lose 8 gigs worth of memory cards, I'm going to lose that whole day's worth of pictures. So she called back a couple times to the rental car agency just to make sure that no one had turned anything in or that there was any word, nothing, no word at all. So then about a week later, she gets a phone call from a lady. It was actually the lady who had rented the car right after Maggie. And she had found the memory cards. They were there. They were left there during cleaning, which sort of says something about the cleaning jobs that you get sometimes on the rental cars. Although in this case, that was a good thing because who knows, they could have been trashed or, you know, any number of bad things could have happened, sucked up in those super high volume vacuums that they use. You know, you just hear them clunk, 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 clunk. Oh my God, another four gigs, you know, rattling up the hose there into the vacuum. But this lady called and she says, I found these memory cards and are you Maggie Hallahan and do they belong to you? And Maggie says, yes, yes, oh my gosh. And they proceeded to have a conversation and made arrangements for Maggie to receive shipment of the cards from the lady who found them. Now, at this point, you should be asking yourself, how did this lady know to call Maggie to see if these memory cards were hers? Well, this is the tip. This is the trick. What Maggie does, which I can't believe I never thought of this. And now I feel, you know, sort of embarrassed to admit this to all of you. But what Maggie does is she puts her name and her phone number and USA on every one of her memory cards. Her name, her phone number, and USA. That way, if it's if she's traveling internationally and they're found in another country, as they were in this case, then it's easier for people to track you down. Area code and phone number is great for those of us that are just in the United States, but you know, if you're outside the United States, it really helps to know what country that phone number is associated with, so you can get the right country code when you try to call. So Maggie, because she put her name, she just uses a Sharpie to do that, you know, nothing fancy. Just when she first gets the card, you know, even before she formats it, she takes a Sharpie out, she puts her name, phone number, and USA on it. And in this case, not only did she receive all of her memory cards back from this person who found them, but all of the shots were intact, and she did not lose that day's work. And I think this is just a fabulous tip. I mean, I mark my camera bag. I try to mark, you know, just about anything that I can that can get separated from me. But I never really thought to put my name, phone number, and country on the memory cards themselves. And believe me, that's one of the things that I am doing right now before I go out on my next shoot. So that's pro tip number one. The next tip I have deals with sensor dust. And this is something that, you know, the bigger the sensor on your DSLR, the more of an issue that dust often becomes. Now, the latest generation of DSLRs are starting to give you some tools to manage sensor dust, but a lot of us have cameras that really, you know, don't have anything specific. They allow you to lock up the mirror and blow off the sensor. So we were all kind of, you know, talking about it every now and then, especially when we were in the workroom and a print would come up and there would be, you know, a sensor dust right there. And you go, oh, man, now I got to spot that, you know, that sort of groan. So what I noticed a few of the photographers doing lately when I've been on shoots is that every time they change their lens, what they do is the lens that they're about to put onto their camera, they blow it off with a, you know, one of those squeeze bulbs. I like the rocket blaster myself, but there's any number of them out there. So they blow off the lens every time before they mount it. And what all of these photographers said that use this technique is that they have much less of a problem with sensor dust than they did before, because most of the dust that gets into the camera usually travels, gets there from the lens that you're mounting. Now, yes, if you took off your lens and you pointed the camera upward and, you know, let the breeze blow by and all that kind of stuff, yes, you would get dust blowing in there, no question about it. But most of us use pretty good technique that way. We keep the camera pointed down. We have all of our lenses ready to mount before we, you know, make the exchange. We try to do it quickly and try to do it so nothing blows in while we're doing it. And that does help a lot to keep dust off the sensor. But I thought this tip was fabulous of just carrying a bulb blower with you to blow off your lens every time before you mount it. And I've started doing it. I've been doing it now for about a month since I, you know, learned this technique. And I have to tell you, I have hardly had any sensor dust problem at all. So the second tip is make sure that you blow off your lens, the back of your lens, before you mount it. Make a swift exchange and try to keep anything from blowing into the camera while you change lenses. This next tip, this third tip that I have, is from Michael Reichman, and it's kind of an interesting one. With the problems for photographers with flying these days, it's getting more and more difficult all the time. And of course, you know, we all know that none of us want to check the bag that has all of our photo gear in it, because first of all, you can't lock it. Second of all, if it doesn't get smashed by the baggage handlers, there's a very good chance that somewhere along the line, someone is going to open that bag. And I know many, many instances where photographers have lost a lens, sometimes more than one, out of their bag when they had to check it, under, you know, extreme circumstances where they normally would not have. So checking your photo bag is definitely not the way to go. However, we also know that more and more instances now, we could be presented with a situation, especially when we're already somewhere and we have to get back home, you know, in another country, or something happens while we're gone and they tighten security, and that there's a possibility that we may have to check our photo bags. So this tip that Michael Reichman gave me was a pretty good one. What he does is when he boards the plane, and on the days that he travels, he wears his photo vest. And, you know, he just has it on. Doesn't necessarily have anything in it, but he has it on. And, you know, of course, it's already handy for, you know, carrying your passport and your iPod and, you know, maybe some of the other gizmos that you may have with you. And he says that the few times that he's been presented with the situation where he had to check his photo bag, and he didn't want to, of course, but, and, you know, it would push back a little bit, but there's only so much you can do when you're in that situation. What he's done then is that he's, before he checked his photo bag, he would open it up, he would pull out some of the most valuable pieces, maybe an expensive DSLR body, and a couple of his most prized lenses, the most expensive ones, and put them in his photo vest, and then just wear his photo vest when he boarded the plane. Now, of course, the photo vest would have to go through, the X-ray thing and all that sort of stuff. But it's actually apparel. And he says, he told me that that's actually worked for him. And it's something to keep in your back pocket. It may not work because, you know, every situation when it comes to flying is a little bit different. We never know what we're going to be presented with. But it seems like at least you have some sort of plan B in case you do have to check your bag with all your valuables in it. You can stash a couple things in your photo vest, just wear them on board, and hope for the best. So that's pro tip number 3. Okay, so I have 2 more gems for you. The next one, this one's from me, actually, and it has to do with white balance. Now, I've talked about custom white balance in a previous show, and if you haven't listened to it, I would, because this next tip is, I tell you, I've been using it over and over again lately, and it has made a world of difference in my photographs. But use custom white balance whenever you're in any sort of lighting situation where you're not working in photographic daylight. And photographic daylight, I believe, is about 5,500 Kelvin. You know, just the normal sort of sunny day without any clouds in the sky. The minute you start working existing light indoors during the day, the minute you go under a tree, the minute you do anything, any sort of artificial lighting, the minute you're in any of those situations, I highly recommend using the custom white balance setting on your camera, and you can either take a measurement for it where you have the light reflecting off a white sheet of paper, or you can put a coffee filter over your camera lens and point it at the light source, or you can use an Expo disc, which is my favorite way to go. I just love the Expo disc and carry it with me all the time. So, and I explain all of those methods in the Custom White Balance show. But I just did another test again yesterday where I was doing a shoot, and it was indoors, and I wanted to shoot existing light. I didn't want to use any lighting at all because I had lighting coming from windows in a couple different directions, and I had enough light to do some very interesting stuff. I could get a rim lighting and front lighting all at the same time just using the light that was bouncing around in this room from windows. So I wanted to shoot existing light. I pulled out my 85mm f1.8 Canon lens, and I used a 51.8 a little bit too, and I moved the ISO up to about 400, and I had enough light. I wanted anything outside of the eyes on this shoot, you know, to kind of go soft. You know, I just wanted nice sharp eyes for these portraits, and you know, then anything else that was within that shallow depth of field was fine, and then everything else I kind of wanted to get kind of soft, and so wanted to use existing light. But the lighting was tricky. So I actually did a test. I did most of the shoot with the Expo disc and using the custom white balance function, and those shots turned out great. I mean, they're spot on in terms of color and exposure. Then I also shot some shots using the cloudy setting, which a lot of times is a setting that we sort of have to use when we're, you know, in cool light like that. And in auto white balance mode, which, you know, as we all know, works pretty well most of the time. And I was shooting raw, so I, you know, I always had a backup, but I wanted to do just a straight on test and then compare them. So I compared them last night. The ones where I used the custom white balance versus auto white balance versus cloudy. And I tell you, what a huge difference. And it's not just that the skin tones are correct and the other tones in the room are correct, although that's, you know, no small thing. It's a very important thing. But for some reason, having all those tones correct, and there was another dimension to those shots that wasn't in the ones that didn't read the color temperature correctly. So it wasn't just that the color was right, but the whole shot had more of a zip to it, had more oomph, just, you know, looked better on a lot of different levels. And I've just become very, very hooked on this custom white balance feature, even when I'm shooting raw. Now, a little portable camera that I've been testing lately and we'll be writing about here and there is the Canon PowerShot SD700, I believe, IS. And when I was, you know, researching these different cameras compact cameras I wanted to test, because I hadn't tested compact cameras in a while, and just, you know, I want to make sure that I keep up with this. And the thing that I noticed that was on this camera is that even though it's a compact camera, 6-megapixel camera, it has the custom white balance option right there in the menu, along with the other white balance options. So now, you know, we're starting to see custom white balance show up even in the smallest of compact cameras. And this is absolutely great news, because In my opinion, the auto white balance on the compact cameras doesn't work as well as the auto white balance in the DSLRs. So custom white balance is even more important. Plus, in the compact cameras, you're not allowed to shoot RAW because they don't have a RAW function. So you have to shoot JPEG, which means for a compact camera, any color adjustments that you make are destructive. You'll be throwing away some information. So on a compact camera that's recording a JPEG, it's even more important to get your color balance right if you want to produce the best shots possible. And since these little guys produce great photographs, I mean, I'm amazed at the quality of image I can get out of these compact cameras. So I don't want to mess with it. I don't want to destruct any of the image. So good shooting technique is even more important when you're shooting JPEG, in my opinion. So with the little Canon SD700 IS, I took my Expo disc and I went to the custom white balance. And it was very easy to use. You basically just put the disc over the lens and then you push a button and tell the camera to read the light. And then once it does is it sets the white balance based on that reading. And then I did some comparison shots compared to auto white balance and the custom white balance with the Expo disc. And what a huge difference. I mean, it was a much bigger difference than what I see with the DSLRs. And I'm going to continue to test this, but I thought, you know, if you do have a relatively new compact camera, take a look at the white balance menu. See if you have custom white balance on there. And if you do, use one of these methods that I've talked about and try it, because I think over the long haul, you'll really produce better photographs with less destruction to them while you're trying to correct color. Now, my last tip is a pretty good one too, which is when you're taking pictures outside, and I've talked about this before, but it's really worth mentioning again. You know, you can use fill flash, which is great in a pinch, and on jobs where I have to work quickly, such as weddings, I will use fill flash a lot more. When I'm doing more portrait work or photographs where I can work a little bit slower, where I don't have to follow the action, but where I get to dictate the action a little bit, then I've become a huge fan of reflectors, and especially these collapsible disc reflectors. And I get someone to come along with me on the shoot, or if I know there's going to be a few extra hands there, then I just bring a few of these discs and use them to reflect light back into the models from the shadow side, or, you know, whatever just looks good to your eye. That's the nice thing about working with reflectors, that you actually get to move the reflector around until you get the look that you want, which is, you know, much easier to predict than with fill flash. As I said, I love fill flash when I have to work quickly and I don't get to dictate the action. But when I have more time and when I get to be in control, I really like reflectors. Now, if you don't want to spend, you know, the $30, $40, $50, depending on what size you get, for these light discs, you know, these collapsible reflectors, you can just make your own out of, white cardboard or foam core, you know, anything. You know, one of the things that I've used in a pinch is the windshield shade for my car. It is a silver on the outside, and you know, when you put it up in the car to keep heat from sunlight from shining in there directly, and then it's white on the backside. And when I've needed a reflector in a pinch and I didn't have my disc with me, then what I do is I would grab the sunshade out of the car and have someone hold it, and for a little softer reflection, you reflect off the white side of the sunshade and it fills in nicely. It's a very nice fill light. Works great. And the nice thing about the car sunshades is that they're nice and long, so you get lots of reflection area. And then if you want something that's a little hotter, a little brighter, then you turn around and reflect off the right side, the shiny side, the side that looks like aluminum. Now, the one thing I will warn you about is that don't reflect these things right into your model's eyes, because it hurts. it hurts. So if you're using the shiny side, be very careful that you don't shine it in the model's eyes. It just kind of will, you know, it's a bummer. It hurts and sort of slows things down. And, you know, the model's going, you know, what are you doing? shining that thing in my eyes? It's killing me. So be careful, especially with the shiny side. The white side, you have a little bit more latitude because it isn't such a hot reflection. And, you know, you can get these car sunshades for, you know, anywhere between, you know, $5 and $15 at, you know, most discount stores. They don't cost very much. They fold up accordion style, most of them. They're very easy to carry around, and they work great. They're really a neat way to get introduced to using reflectors in the field without having to spend a whole lot of money. The one thing I would recommend is that when you're looking at these car sunshades as a reflector, try to get one that has a white side to it, not just the shiny silver side, because actually I find the white side a lot more useful than the super hot shiny side. So there's a great tip for you. Get your $10 reflector for in the field, just a fraction of the cost of what you would pay for the professional ones that you get at the store. Okay, let's do a little virtual camera club business right now. First of all, I want to remind you that this month's photo assignment for September is Circle, and I have some really good entries coming in. I think we're going to have another just bang-up gallery this month, but you only have until the end of the month, only until the last day of September, to turn it in. So get those entries in. Go to the submissions page on the Digital Story. And just know that even though the submission page still says 400 pixels, that I will take photos up to 600 pixels horizontal shots if you want to submit something a little bit bigger, because it looks like I'm going to have enough shots to do the separate gallery again like I did last month. And those look real nice when they're a little bit bigger. So you can go up to 600 pixels or 600 pickles, depending on your taste. But at any rate, get that entry Circle in by the end of September, and let's make another dynamite gallery like we did for August. The other thing about grab shots, I want to remind you that I love the grab shots that are coming in, but make sure that you give me a few paragraphs to go with it. I want to hear some of the story. I want to hear about the situation, the circumstances that you captured the image, because for most of us, that part of it is as interesting as the shot itself. And I think it's one of the things that separates what we do on the Digital Story from other sites that just, you know, throw up a weekly shot and don't really tell you anything about it. And don't forget about my favorite lens. Again, if you're just wildly in love with one of your lenses, then let us all know about it. Write it up. Tell us how you use it. Send a couple shots if you want to go with it. And just share with the whole world why you think your glass is the best. So, one other thing. I want to give a shout out to Boinks Software, the makers of Photo Magico. There's a tile on the homepage of the Digital Story. They are continuing to support the site. They're great sponsors. I feel really lucky to have them. We did the slideshow showcase back a few months ago, and they said it was a great success for them as well as it was for us. And they're continuing to support the site, and I just want to thank them for that. And hope that I think they're going to have some new products here real soon, so I can't wait to see what they're up to. All right, well, I think that will do it for this week. We got lots to work on. You want to wrap up that photo assignment, Circle. You want to get those grab shots in. I sent out the keychains. Yay, I sent out the last batch of keychains. So those of you that have published your grab shots before, those will be showing up. If you haven't gotten it already, they'll be showing up real soon. Thanks a lot. See you next week. Go get some great shots. Bye-bye now.
your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.